This is Arch of ArchRadio.com. Today is Tuesday, June 13th, 2006. On yesterday's show, you heard us talking a lot of politics, and we'll probably talk some more today. We have the boyfriend back. Say hello, boyfriend.
Hello, boyfriend.
How are you?
I'm fine. How are you, Leroy?
Leroy. I'm now Leroy. You know what? I think some of those guys in that band we were hearing could be called Leroy, could they?
I think so. We were entertained by a 50s rockabilly band.
We went on Saturday, we went to Chrysalis Vineyards, and we went to their wine and swine event. And what did you think about it?
Oink, oink.
Oink, oink. They had, you had ribs and...
No, I did not. I had brisket.
Oh, brisket, yeah.
Brisket and sausage.
And sausage.
And good creamy coleslaw.
Oh, it was good, wasn't it?
It was excellent. And you had the whole bowl of it.
It was delicious. I loved it. Yeah, right.
Oh, you but now did like it.
There was this band called Billy Clements and the Side...
The Pickups.
Pickups. And Billy Clements and the Pickups, yeah. And the funny thing was that this guy, the main guy, I guess, Billy... Was it Billy?
Billy.
Or Jimmy?
I think it was Billy.
I think it was Billy. He had a picture on his, their advertisements, showing him at least 15 years earlier.
And 20 pounds lighter.
20 pounds lighter, and he had much more hair.
Lot more hair.
And this...
Minus the jowls.
Yeah. But then there was one guy in the band that was kind of, interesting. What did you compare him to, or who did you compare him to?
Buddy Holly.
Buddy Holly. He had a Buddy Holly-esque look to him.
This was out in the Middleburg horse country of Virginia. We noticed lots of men in cowboy boots.
There were lots of men in cowboy boots. Their wines were good. I really liked the
wines. Norton. Were good. That was your favorite. I liked the Albarino. That was still my favorite.
That is one of my favorites. Yep, I agree with that. So that was a pretty fun time, I would say.
What we've noticed with some of these events in Virginia, there is a disposition toward Elvis.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Regardless of how they bill themselves, we've gone to so-called jazz events, so-called Motown reviews.
Yeah.
Today's event was Wine and Swine with... I don't know that they label the music, but regardless, whether it's Motown, jazz, Billie Holiday, for some reason it morphs into an Elvis impersonation experience. Lots of Elvis tunes.
And all those guys who were playing the band had sideburns, didn't they?
Sideburns and pompadours.
Yeah.
And tacky clothing.
Oh, yes. Most definitely.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. Do they think that the people who visit wineries are...
Wouldn't know the difference?
Or, no, wouldn't... I don't know if they wouldn't know the difference, but are, hickish, hillbilly-ish or something?
I don't know. Last year we went to the Hillside event, and we were going to bring a friend because he's this Motown expert. He ended up not coming. We were so glad because it was supposed to be... A night of soul and Motor City classics. And it was just a band playing Elvis.
And it wasn't even good Elvis.
We weren't dancing in the streets.
No.
We weren't stopping in the name of love. It was hunka hunka burning love.
Hunka
hunka. And love me tender.
Hunka hunka crap.
You hound dog.
Oh, that reminds me. Should we go to iTunes and play some music from Elvis?
Well, I heard so much Elvis today.
Is Elvis even on iTunes?
Oh, I'm sure.
I spell.
Well, but maybe not, because doesn't Michael Jackson own a lot of the Elvis tunes?
No, here we go.
Oh, that's a classic.
That's Suspicious Minds.
Suspicious Eyes. Suspicious Minds.
Whatever.
Minds, you got the word wrong.
How about this classic?
If I can't help falling in love with
Archer.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Like a river flowing.
Well, you know what I've noticed about these wedding bands, Elvis impersonators?
Yeah.
They don't do Elvis when he was very attractive.
No.
And artistically creative, which would be 1955.
Right.
They do fat Vegas Elvis.
Of like late
they
60s,
dress
early
like fat, like fat Vegas Elvis. They sing like fat Vegas Elvis.
They do.
They sing those cheesy fat Elvis Vega tunes.
You're thinking of the good Elvis of this time.
Right. Or like even the Sun Record. You know, he was with Sun Records.
Well, Jailhouse Rock was in the 50s, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was like his, I guess his breakup. But wasn't he like with Sun Records when he was kind of like a...
Yeah, I don't know.
More of a regional cult kind of a...
I don't know that they have any of those songs on here. Can you name one of those songs? What about... with this one.
An angry young man someday.
That's late 60s.
Take a look at you and me.
Do you know what this is?
In the ghetto.
You're right.
Oh, my mother was a huge Elvis fan. In fact, my mother saw Elvis in 1973. The Aloha Tour when he was...
Okay, I'll stop that. But anyway, back to iTunes and what this is making me think of. Have you heard the song Dear Mr. President by Pink? Have you heard that?
Well, you played it for me earlier today.
Well, honey, you're supposed to act as if you've...
Oh, I've never heard it before.
Well, not that
last I heard of Pink, she was some kind of like rocker chick.
Well, I heard this song...
With pink hair.
A couple of months ago on Madge Weinstein's show, and I loved it because she is, you know, pretty much... Well, let me just play a little clip of it here. Let me just speed it up.
The mirror, are you proud?
It's really this part.
Were you a lonely boy? Come and we're not blind. They're all sitting in your cells while you pave a road to hell. What kind of father would take his own daughter's rights away?
This is a good part right here.
And what kind of father might hate his own daughter if she were gay?
Yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to turn that down.
I can only imagine.
But I really like this song because I think it's a great commentary on Bush's administration of the last...
Well, yeah, true, but who's going to listen to the song?
Well, that's just the point. No one's going to... Well, people will listen to it, but the people who need to listen to it won't hear it.
Well, that would be...
Bush, Cheney.
I mean, it's more singing to the choir, as far as I mean, yes, it's a song for our times, and we've mentioned this before. It's a very dark, cynical, disgusting part of our history. We'll be paying for it for how many years down the road?
So true.
It's wanting to turn the hands of time back to 1955.
Exactly.
Drive the big cars, drink all the gas you want. Gays go back in the closet. Women run the vacuum cleaners. The men will make the decisions. I mean, it's a fear of change that the American people have decided we don't want to change. We want to pretend it's the 50s. So we have what we have, and unfortunately we have two more years of it. And they can sing all the songs we want. I mean, until the American people have decided they're going to take it to the streets or they're going to speak up about it. I mean, the gay marriage issue, I told you this, I wrote to David Vitter, the representative from Louisiana.
That.
He represents the area ravaged by Hurricane Katrina. He's the one who made the statement that the Constitution, the proposed amendment to the Constitution to ban gay marriage, was the number one issue facing Americans today. Well, that made me angry because
he's speaking for certain people
representing. The part of Louisiana that he represents, I would think the number one issue for him is to rebuild New Orleans and southern Louisiana after a catastrophic hurricane. And I know what my parents went through. I have a couple of friends who live down there. They're gay. They lost absolutely everything they own. One of whom left New Orleans with the clothes on his back and has nothing else. So I wrote him a letter and I said, I really find it hard. It's hard for me to believe that after what my family has been through, my friends have been through.
And you're just one example of thousands of people.
Banning gay marriage is the number one issue. That is what you need to be representing. And I asked him in my email letter, do you represent gay Americans whose lives were destroyed in that hurricane? Do you represent them?
Now, did you get a response?
No, I haven't gotten a response. My last paragraph said, oh, by the way, I'm gay. And my parents and my siblings know that I'm gay, and they love me. And they love my boyfriend. And aww. I am going to tell them what I think about your statements concerning gay marriage after they've just finished repairing their hurricane-damaged homes. And maybe next time they won't vote for you.
And I doubt they will, actually.
Well, I don't know, but...
Now, is he in the Senate?
No, he's in the House of Representatives.
Okay, is he up for re-election in November?
No.
Okay.
But my next letter is going to Bill Frist.
Oh, God.
What is that? I'm going to tell Bill Frist that looking at the Terri Schiavo intervention that he attempted, the gay marriage thing going on, he really strikes me as someone who is constantly repenting for sins.
His own.
And I think what he really should be dealing with is his abusive animals.
That's
because
right.
As we know, Bill Frist seemed to like dissecting cats when he was in medical school. In fact, more cats than was necessary for medical students studying medicine.
You mean like he did it for fun?
It became a kink.
Ooh, are you serious?
Oh, I am dead serious.
That's weird.
So I think he should really devote his time now to animal rights activism.
Well, now, in terms of this gay marriage or whatever, because they're not calling it gay marriage. They're calling it defensive marriage.
Defensive marriage. No Child Left Behind. Clear skies. It's all cloaked in words
in
that
rhetoric.
Doesn't sound threatening, but it's damaging, as we all know. So.
Well, what do you think we can do about it? Because, you know, the House of Representatives is taking up the debate on this this summer.
Well, and so where is it going to go? I mean...
Well, no, it's not going to pass or anything like that. But as I've said on a couple of shows this past week, just the fact that they're even having the debate is sickening. Because it's like... I don't know how I can describe it, but... like debating whether black people should be able to drink out of the same water fountains as white people. Thinking about that today, that's ludicrous, isn't it? To spend congressional time on that.
Well, think about what's going on. I mean, most states have already passed some version of banning gay marriage. Some states have left the door open for civil unions, and others, whatever. I mean,
it's on the ballot in Virginia.
Is it really? 7th. Well, is it really necessary for a constitutional amendment for such a thing? Well, no. But I think I'm realistic enough, even though I am socially liberal and politically liberal, I am realistic. I mean, when I came out over 20 years ago, it was a lot easier for me to come out in the late 80s than it was for someone my age in the late 60s.
Very true.
Which, looking back, you know, 1987, 88, coming out now is a lot easier than when I came out.
Exactly.
I mean, we've come a long way. However, I understand that most Americans still can't get their minds around two men or two women getting married. Which, if we had a civil debate about what that would mean, two people wanting to have a a relationship that is recognized by a secular government or, you know, a civil union, so that, you know, if something happens to me, for example, you would inherit my property, much like my, you know, my mother would not be kicked to the curb if my dad dies.
Right.
I mean, it's really about some minimal level of respect and dignity. But we don't have that kind of debate in this country. We haven't had that yet. So until that happens, and who knows when that's going to happen, maybe another 5-10 years from now, when Americans will begin to say, well, you know, this is a lot of political nonsense. What's really behind this?
Yeah, but when are they going to realize that?
It's all an evolving process. And I understand that most Americans can't yet get their brains around it. But I do think most Americans are beyond the point where they want to see gay Americans denied jobs or denied homes or left in hospitals and their lovers can't see them. I think we're beyond that point. But I think
that's only been in the last 20 years since we've come out.
Absolutely. And so, you know, much like the civil rights movement in the 60s where, you know, the Plessy versus Ferguson, I think it was 1898. By the time we got to the 50s and 60s, it had reached that point when things had to change.
You're saying that basically, I know it's probably not a good thing to say, but if we hang in there and wait a while.
Not wait a while. I mean, continue
keep
to be
doing
active,
things. Yes, I'm not saying
and,
not do anything.
And what we have now is, whereas I might be willing to say, well, I understand Americans aren't ready to consider two men in a sanctioned relationship. You can understand that. Yet I'm not willing to say, well, I'm going to keep my mouth shut about it. Well, I'm not. You know, you continue to speak out, to be active, but what in this environment, even though I'm willing to work with the current environment, because it's being put on ballots in all of these states, and because it's coming up as a constitutional amendment, you're forced to take a stand, and that's
true.
Where the Republicans have been very skilled politicians. Karl Rove in 2004 understood, put it on the ballot, and force people to make a decision. So even though 80% of Americans wouldn't want to see a gay man tossed on the street without a home or a job, or dying in a hospital without seeing his lover, for example, I think we're beyond that point. You know, most Americans understand it really isn't 1958, and gay Americans shouldn't live in a closet.
Right.
They're not ready to look at two men in a civilly sanctioned union. They're evolving on that process. But when it's forced on a ballot, you're forced to make a decision.
But at the same time, though, I think what this actually is showing is that, because there were surveys done that said that, like, 52% of Americans, or 48% of Americans don't want gay marriage, but like 52% of Americans say they don't want the Constitution rewritten.
But then when you break,
say no.
Well, no, but you've got to dig a little deeper, because those kinds of numbers don't mean much to me unless I can dig a little deeper. So 48% of America, or 52% of Americans, don't support gay marriage, but do they support civil unions, or do they support two men living together, or do they think two women in a relationship should have a home and a I mean, when you break down how Americans really believe, when you break down that number who don't support gay marriage, many more of them would actually support a civil union,
for example. I agree.
And many more of them don't really have a problem with two men in a relationship or with homosexuals. I mean, when you break down how Americans really feel about it, it's more nuanced than this black or white scenario. Yet, on the ballot, the question is,
forced.
Do you support this? So you're forced to vote yes or no, and that's what Karl Rove understood in 2004.
Because he knew that.
And that's the wedge. The wedge issue.
Is the wedge issue in, what's the wedge issue going to be in 2008?
We've already seen it. It's immigration.
Oh, yeah, immigration. You think it's going to come back again in 2 years?
It's cyclical. Of course it will.
Well, that's
true. After November, we won't care if they speak Spanish or Pig Latin. Let's face it.
Well, you're right. It is cyclical because
it's the ugly cyclical nature of American politics, and it's even hideous now because here's a group of people who they come here. They're willing to do shit jobs for less than minimum. And we know in our own environment here, less than minimum wage. I know we both know from our job, from what we do as a living. Some of these kids go home. They're living two or three families in an apartment. They don't have health care insurance. I mean, some of these Hispanic girls don't do their homework because they're cleaning offices with their mothers.
Mm-hmm.
Their mothers don't speak English because they're busy working. I mean, the whole nonsense with, well, they ought to speak English. Well, when would they learn English? Where would they go? When would they have time? How could they afford it? Where would they go when our president has eviscerated literacy programs, particularly those that, at least for the budget, I think it was in 2004, of the 64, 65 government education programs, over half had received either half reductions and funding or zero funding, which included literacy programs for those who don't speak English. So where are they going to learn to speak English? And if you've done any traveling, you go to Europe, for example, well, most Europeans, for example, speak English and French and Spanish and Italian,
and
you go to the French cafe and there are signs or menus in various languages. And it's here, it's like we're living in this fucking fishbowl looking out and wondering, well, if you're going to come here, you're going to speak English. You're going to come here, you're going to salute the flag.
Welcome
to the global community. I mean,
the United States is the embarrassment to the world, I believe.
I don't want to say embarrassment. I think it's arrogance. Arrogance based, the foundation is ignorance. And that's what's in the White House. National leadership is usually the face of how the populace or the masses feel. That's what I know from history, anyway.
It's happened the past 6 years.
So Americans are afraid of change. We don't want those aliens here, but we want them to clean our pools. We want them to mow our lawns. We want them to build our ridiculously large homes. But we don't want to really know they're there.
Well, just like Gaze.
So let them go back to their basement apartments with three other families, without health care, and wonder, why is it they can't speak English and have to go to the McDonald's and order in Spanish? I mean, that's our level of thought, because we don't want to really debate the real issues, which is they're doing these jobs because companies who pay these folks don't want to pay a living wage to Americans to perform. They don't want to pay for health care. So here comes these folks from Mexico. They're here for a while. They'll work for shit wages. And whether they're here next week or back in Mexico, we don't really care. And that's a cynical attitude to have about Americans.
But
again, look, we were out driving in Virginia. We saw these, H3 Hummers out on the road. We saw this Cadillac dealership the building looked like it was on steroids. You know what I'm talking about? That dealership, it was so hideous and large. The facility, the showroom was so large, it was all glass. Now, mind you, in August here in this area, it gets up to 108 degrees. So how much air conditioning would they run in that kind of a facility, you'd have to wonder. But who would go there and buy a Cadillac in the current environment where gas is $3.25 a gallon here in this area?
Well, I guess the people who are buying a Cadillac can afford the gas.
Well, but again, it's what we have. The folks we have as our national leaders, they're the face of our psyche, our psychology. And so we don't want to think about change. We don't want to change. We know it's coming. We're, you know, the white Protestant male dominance is being threatened by Hispanics, single women, gays, all of whom are willing to do the jobs, to face the challenges, you know, to whatever.
Okay,
it's very threatening.
Okay, if the administration kind of runs or dictates how the country is feeling or going, like you, I don't know how you just described it. Do you think a change in the administration come 2008, more liberal, maybe democratic, will change the feeling in the country?
I don't know. I have no idea. Uh-huh. Well, I mean, I'm not encouraged. I'm going to be honest. Hillary Clinton doesn't do much for me.
I know. You've said that before. And you know what? I think everyone is even though she was renominated for her Senate seat, I don't think she's going to get any kind of nod for the presidency.
Well, what disturbs me, and you can say this about John McCain. I don't know that maybe both parties do, but Hillary Clinton in particular, what the Clintons were skillful at doing in the 90s, they really solicited opinions from focus groups, and everything was data-driven.
Yeah.
So when Hillary Clinton speaks, it's because she's gotten confirmation from a particular focus group that that's what's appropriate for her to say.
Is she still doing that now at the Senate?
Oh, absolutely. And yes.
Okay.
And I think I'm kind of tired of this back and forth between the Clintons and the Bush people. And fresh ideas, fresh faces, reality. I want national leaders who say what we need to hear, not what we want to hear.
Yeah.
So I don't want to hear that prosperity is around the corner. We're going to rescue you from your miseries, and if you vote for me, help is on the way, that saying that Kerry and Edwards had. Yeah. I don't want to hear that. I want to hear, you know what? We need to make some radical changes in how we think, how we live.
Okay, you know who just said that this past week?
Who did?
Hillary Clinton. She said that major changes have to take place.
So what did she propose?
Well, I don't know. I didn't listen to it long
ago. I mean, that's the problem. I mean, we all know it, but is she going to say to us, you can't drive a Hummer anymore because you're destroying the environment?
But didn't Bush say something like that?
You can't afford to rack up the credit card because the interest rates are going to reach a point where you're going to be in bankruptcy court, which you can't do anymore because of the bankruptcy laws.
Right.
You cannot.
So depressing.
Well, I mean, really, that's what we need to hear.
I know, but I don't think we're going to hear it. Honey, we have to stop the show.
Okay.
You've done, again, I get you on a tangent, and you just do an amazing job.
Get a history teacher in a social studies department in front of a microphone, and we can't shut up.
I think many people agree with many things you have to say. And you know what? Here's the thing. If they don't agree, we'll hear about it. So.
Well, and they should, because, we don't have intelligent debate on any topic in this country. We have bobbing heads on the media.
People telling us how to think.
And, the whole gay marriage thing. Well, President Bush met with community leaders.
Yeah.
Well, who did he meet with? James Dobson, Jerry Falwell.
Members of Exodus.
Members of Exodus.
Was there any gay people
Bill
there?
Bill Frist. Well, if I surrounded myself with that kind of a circle, I wouldn't hear any different opinions, would I?
And there were no gay people there.
But that's kind of symptomatic.
Except for those Exodus guys, they were really gay.
But it's symptomatic of, again, we drive out to Manassas or drive out to rural, Louisiana, where I live, and talk to some of my brothers-in-laws, for example. Well, they don't really talk to why don't immigrants learn to speak English? Well, let's ask them. In fact, let's find out what their daily lives are like.
Why do
gays want to get married? Well, let's talk to them and find out. Well, we don't have that kind of discussion here.
No, they would not ask those questions.
We have very shrill shrieking on Hannity and Combs, Bill O'Reilly.
And Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter.
Oh, my God, she's such a...
Well, she's beyond help.
Yes. But,
well, she needs help. She needs to get laid.
I don't know what she needs, but she was fucked last week when she was talking about the 9/11 widows.
Oh, yeah, and look at her book cover. She dresses in such a way that even if she came to my public high school, she would violate our dress code, which is very liberal.
Yeah.
I mean, what's up with that, like, whatever she's wearing, a little, like, cut-off tank top or whatever she's wearing?
Midriff.
Bustier, I don't know what she's wearing. But let's face it, she's in her mid-40s, she's not married, she dresses like a slut, so...
You are what you dress like.
Well, I think Anne has... That's why Anne's needs are not being met.
That's why I'm a lesbian, because I dress like a lesbian.
Let's send Billie Jean King on a date with Anne Coulter. Yeah.
All right, we got to wrap this up. Boyfriend, thank you so much for being on the show for the past 2 days. I hope you enjoyed your visit here to these last 2 days.
I did.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, boys and girls, until next time.
Bye, Leroy.
Bye. I should